Pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. 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 Pain is inevitable.
Buried treasure!
Buried treasure? Treasure.
Hello and welcome to Buried Treasure. I'm Paul Tyler and this is the podcast where we've buried, for this first series, at least £100 in cash in the ground somewhere in the UK. And by finding the clues throughout this first series, which will be 6 episodes, this is the 5th, you will be able to take your shovel to the ground and go and dig up the treasure. It's been a little while since we did episode 4, the old cheese knife episode. Some people they would apologise. They would have the decency to apologise between the distance in the episodes. I'm not going to bother. So one of the things we've been busy with is the other programme we produce for Joe Schmo is Spoiler.
This is one of the best films I've ever seen.
Absolutely, just bang, 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 all the way through.
You know, all I want to do now is watch that. Spoiler, the show which reviews movies, books and TV shows in their entirety. Twists, endings and all.
I don't think it's a bad ending at all, no.
Without fear of spoilers.
So you were just happy it ended.
Each show is dedicated to just one subject, so we can delve deeper behind the screen or the page.
It might be the geekiest book ever written.
This producer who's made up new lies.
That was also a joke. How can I get out of this sentence?
Join me, Paul Tyler, with Andy Goulding.
Sorry, I've got quite angry about this.
And Rachel Burnett.
I love the jiggly bottoms of the lady.
Find us on Twitter or Facebook, or go to our website, spoilerpodcast.co.uk. It's fun for all the family, right?
Buried treasure.
Recently, I say we recently got nominated, our producer, Johnny, producer of this programme as well, he got nominated for an audio production award in the best podcast category. So the spoiler team popped itself down to London and we didn't win. And it's not the first time we've come back from an awards ceremony. I think that's now the fourth time we've come back from an awards ceremony empty-handed. We've learnt to come away from this now with a reasonable amount of dignity. And it's also occurred to me, it's been playing on my mind, that the amount of people now, we can see the amount of downloads we're getting, and we're happy with it, certainly happy for a first series. So thanks ever so much for downloading and keeping up with the series. But one thing I've thought about is that only one person is gonna win this money. Only, you know, unless they share it or something, that'd be daft. But only one person is going to come away with it, so other people are going to end up feeling, you know, disappointed. And one thing to mention is that this episode is going to go beyond the 13 minutes that we like. We set a target out for ourselves to make these podcasts no longer than 13 minutes and not to waffle on too much. Not really doing that so far in this episode, but the interview I've recorded and something you're about to hear is actually 13 minutes longer in itself. And I thought long and hard about, well, for about 20 minutes, for about how, as to whether I should, you know, snip more out. But actually, that would be taking some of the story away and not, it would make less sense than how it stands now. So, I don't know, we might need to make a shorter episode to balance things out for the whole series, if we really feel the need to do that. So, it's about not everyone being a winner. What you can do to help yourself win in Series 2 is chuck into our GoFundMe. If you go on GoFundMe.com and search out Buried Treasure, you can contribute to Series 2. Once we have £200 in our account, then we are going. We've taken a few people on board so far. But here's the thing. I always think about these sort of things, that even if you can only afford to chuck in a quid, maybe 2 quid, it all contributes and it all goes in. And every single penny we get from that gets buried in the ground for you to find on Series 2. And the aim for us in the first few series is to keep doubling the money and slowly, gradually increase it. And then just to see where we can go from there. So on this theme now of people perhaps coming away or entering into a competition or having their eyes set on a prize and coming away with nothing, it's time to talk to my friend Ian, who I phoned up recently, and we talked about his experience on The Chase, the Tea Time TV game show. And I started by asking Ian, out of all the TV game shows out there, why The Chase?
I think I chose it, one, because I quite enjoyed watching it when I could, so catching it here and there, but I honestly thought that was something I could win, and I would be more in control than other things. I suppose it's a toss-up between that and Pointless, obviously on at the same time, roughly the same point in the schedule. And I suppose when it comes to the crunch, do I trust somebody else to go on with me and control my destiny? Whereas I thought on The Chase I had more of my control of my own destiny. Obviously there are three other people. But watching the show, watching the format, I honestly thought I could win that.
Mm. And what I think what intrigues me about any of these things, I suppose on Pointless do you always get on with someone you know on Pointless? I think you do, don't you?
Yes, you have to go as a couple. Yeah. You and a friend, you and a wife, you and a work colleague. But yeah, you have to go as two. Whereas you rock up to The Chase, and until the day of the filming, you don't know who you're going to be with. You come across all different people through the audition process. But the three people who are on your team, as it's such, you don't know until you arrive at the TV studio.
Okay, and so when you arrive at the TV studio, how long have you got then? Do you have any bonding time with them? Do you have anyone who says, right, history's my thing, I'm up to date on modern jazz, or what goes on there?
This is where the magic of TV breaks down horribly, and it's a really dull process. So you kind of gather in a glamorous travel lodge, 10 minutes away from the recording studios in Bournemouth, and wait for a driver to pick you up, and then you kind of bump into the people and you start chatting, and people are either chatty or nervous, but you're kind of being friendly. You're all about to go through the same experience. You're then driven into the TV studios and escorted around, so you don't bump into either other players who have been filming either a previous or after show, or lo and behold, one of the chasers. You're then parked in essentially a green room, and then you are basically subjected to about 3 hours of nothing while you are forced to wait.
Do you get fed at this point? Do you get fed? You can see where I always think about. Do you get fed?
Yes, you get a light lunch, and there's drinks all the time being available for you.
Could you eat though? Could you? I mean, were you nervous?
No, I don't get nervous for these kind of things. I was just ready to go, really. And I think when you get there, you realise you're part of a factory line. I think they're filming at least three shows a day, maybe four, but certainly three. And you are part of a factory line where they are churning TV shows.
Yeah.
So you are stuck in a room. What was the most entertaining part with it was they read the rules out to us. The rules of The Chase. Now, obviously, if you've watched the TV show, you may have a good idea what's going on. I'm not aware of many people who apply for going on TV shows having never watched the program that they're going for, but evidently they spent an hour reading the rules to us and explaining what we can and can't do on screen and things like that. But yeah, you do get time to bond and chat with each other and say, what are you good at? What do you normally get in a cash builder? Where do you think you'll get? Or which chaser do you want? All those kind of things. You get some time to at least know each other, and then you're told, you don't get to choose, you're told which order you're going in, so who's going first, second, third, and fourth. And then you are dressed, because you have to take clothes with you, which is, again, one of the strange oddities. You're not allowed to wear the clothes that you're wearing on the show. You have to take three or four different versions, so somebody can choose what you should wear for you.
Really?
So you don't clash with other people. Yeah, it's like, there's lots of rules. Obviously, you're not allowed to wear checks and things like that, because still, 70 years after the TV was invented, somebody still can't deal with checks on a screen. And so you choose your clothes, and then you go in a room, somebody irons your shirt for you, and you have your makeup done, and then you get left. For a random last 15 minutes, you're left in a room on your own. With viewing a television, which I thought was just really strange. I don't know if that's there to unnerve you or to relax you. And then kind of you get a knock on the door, and then you're led into the studio.
How many other people in the studio? Are there like the floor managers and camera people, or is that all done by robots these days?
No, there's some humans around. So So there are two or three producers who have been with you all the way through the process. So literally they were the people who spoke to you on the very first interviews, and they've kind of gone through with the whole process. So it's like you have a friendly face. There are obviously, there's all the camera guys, there is the director, et cetera, et cetera, the people controlling all of the machinery and the auto cues, et cetera. So, yeah, there's quite a few people around. So when something funny happens and when, you know, Bradley Walsh goes off on one, as he did when we were on the set, or the cinnamon who was my chaser on the day said something funny, there's actually, you can hear a rumbling of laughter around, which is kind of good, because they're obviously in the darkness. You're on, you know, studio lights, kind of like being on stage, and it's very hard to see beyond, you know, 10 yards of the people around you. So there's a darkness, but yeah, there's lots of people kind of in the studio.
So to your episode then, and you get which position were you in?
I was number two.
You're number two. Okay. So when you get up and you stand there next to Bradley, and you do how many minutes of quickfire questions?
It's 1 minute. So you have a little preamble. Yeah, so preamble. He's obviously had his notes given to him 10 minutes before the show starts. The first person has gone. They've gone through theirs. They've come back because he's the guy who got through, who went first. And then they cut to break down the shots. You see Bradley Walsh dash off around the back. He'll read some notes about me, you know, the literally five bullet points. Up I get. He'll then have a conversation. At the time, I worked for a pizza restaurant, and he was very interested about pizzas, and then so stuff that we wouldn't ever be able to broadcast. We probably had a 5-minute conversation about pizzas, just randomly, which was quite nice because it relaxed. And then literally, he goes, "Well, are you ready?" And you go, "Yeah, I think I'm ready." And then you're off, and literally, you've got to switch your brain on because actually, you've relaxed your brain. You're not thinking about answering questions, and then suddenly, you know, this is it. This is what you're there for. And the questions start being fired at you.
I think I'd be stood there thinking, well, blimey, that's Bradley Walsh. And then not really thinking about what the capital of Argentina is. I mean, so through that round, and I mean, through the whole thing, is there a question that you got wrong that is really bugging you? Is really, you know, is it 3 a.m, you still wake up thinking, oh, Ian, you plum?
Yeah, I got the winner of the Tour de France in whatever, 2013, wrong, who was obviously Bradley Wiggins and... I said Mark Cavendish because I just went, cyclist, Mark Cavendish, fair! Like that. And it just came out my... And do you know when you know the answer?
Yeah.
And obviously, I love cycling. I'm an avid follower of the Tour de France. I knew that answer, and my brain and my mouth took over before I could interject and actually say the correct answer. And just, that's the one I still look back and just go, that was ridiculous. It wouldn't have really made a difference to the outcome, but yeah, that's the one that still I remember really, really horribly.
Yeah, but I mean, you held your own, didn't you? And you got through to the final. How many got through to the final in your round?
Only two. So my episode was quite well mentioned on social media because the girl who went third, so there was a guy called Brian, he got through with $4,000, I got through with $6,000. And then the girl who came next to me didn't get a single question right through the whole thing. And so all the way through the cash builder, she got zero. We had to talk her out of going for a silly offer. And please take the minus offer. We're not confident you're going to come back. You just do your best. And then she failed to get a question right through the main round. So she disappeared, and I imagine she would just be absolutely distraught and probably never wants to talk about the day ever again. Yeah. And then there was a lady on the end who was unlucky, got a couple of bad questions, and she disappeared. So me and Brian were in the final together.
And that final round, I think it is one of the toughest things, because these I mean, you were against the cinnamon, weren't you? But they're all really good. They're all really clever people. They've just got, well, I say clever, they've just got good memories, haven't they?
I'd say so. And it's just, but it's the nooks and crannies of knowledge. I'm quite a good quizzer, and I think I've got a lot of good general knowledge. But it's, you could see how when he was looking for an answer or something he didn't really know about, and you could see he was going, no, that's the answer, bang, and you'd find it somewhere. Mm. And I could see the difference. And I think he even said on the programme, he said, you're a very good quizzer, I'm a great one.
Oh, wow.
Cheers for that. Thanks for that. But it was fine lines. But I think that one, that last round was the hardest, because suddenly you've got this other guy next to you, and there was two questions he answered and pressed the buzzer for, which I knew, and he stumbled on and got them wrong, and he's just like, come on, I could have done that, I could have got those right. And so you are under pressure, because you're trying to build as many answers as you possibly can, because you know somebody awesome's about to come and actually really, really battle you out.
But ultimately, I'm sorry to say this, it sounds cruel. You know, I mean, you're a very good friend of mine. This sounds really cruel. You lost. You didn't come away with the money.
No, I won £0 and zero pence. And I did. I did get my bus fare home in true Jim Bowen style.
Did they?
I got a check at it. Yeah, so I got with the, you either get your train fare or your mileage. And I got a check at the end of the day, and I think it was for about £3.50 because I literally lived up the road. So I'm proud to say I got my bus fare home. I think, you know, that's a great achievement.
Fantastic. But, I mean, here's what I'm thinking about, you know, because the episode I'm talking about here with Buried Treasure is that, you know, there's a few people that are, I mean, some people are going to go out looking and digging for this money and not get it. Some people are not even going to get the chance to do that because someone's going to beat them to it. So how did you feel afterwards? You came off air. I mean, were you still thrilled to be in a, you know, a part of a TV show, or was it just like, oh man, you had plans for that money, you know?
No, I didn't have plans for the money. I honestly think different day, different circumstances, I could have won that show. And I really, a little aside was, I should have gone for the big offer. I went for the easy offer, got my £6,000. I should have gone for the bigger offer because I actually beat Paul Sinner in that round. He got more questions wrong than I did. So I came away going, actually, held up high. I didn't disgrace myself on national TV. I got the experience I was looking for. You know, this was about gaining an experience, doing something that I hadn't done before, and doing something different. And actually just, I've always had that kind of thought process in life and going, if I want to experience something, I'm just going to go for it and do it. And therefore, one day I randomly decided to enter the chase, and I got on even more randomly. And actually, at the end of it, I go, it was good fun. I had a fun day. I did something different. And you know what? I would have walked away with £5,500 in my bank balance if I'd won. You know, nice, but hardly life-changing.
Yeah,
so actually, the experience is worth well more than that.
So what about the atmosphere between contestants afterwards?
Do you know what? Again, because of this factory line thing, once it was over, we were shuffled off at speed. So, yeah, the girl who got no points at all, nothing right, was kind of distraught. And we consoled her. But I literally, we left, we packed up I got my bus fare home. We put in Bradley Walsh's driver's car because our taxi disappeared, which was a nice kind of end of the day. Parked in the hotel we arrived in and was like, right, you can go. Got my car keys out and went home. Mm. And literally there was no, oh, you know, you're a great guy, we should contact each other on Facebook. No, I just went home and went and had my tea. And it was just like a normal day. It was just like a very, very normal day. So, I know, but I wrapped that all up as part of the experience. And the next day I went to work and life carried on.
Okay, well, I suppose ultimately my final question has to be, and I wouldn't forgive myself, and I think the audience are asking this now. They're saying, what's Bradley Walsh really like?
Do you know what? For the limited time you're with him, I mean, one-on-one, very limited, but on set, he was funny, but funny in the way that they won't be able to show you on TV. He was brilliant. He went off on a literal tirade at one point about the Kardashians, which was just brilliant. And literally, we had to stop filming. Everybody had tears in their eyes. It was just brilliant. And he was literally at it. And actually, you go, I've got some respect for you. I really have.
Yeah.
And actually, he just came across as a really normal guy who's probably, you know, had a lucky break here and there. He's obviously got some talent as well. But, he's the kind of guy you go, you know, if at the end of it, he's like, do you want to go to the pub? You go, yeah, I'll go to the pub for a beer with him. He seems like a normal chap.
Good.
Although he did keep repeating the phrase, between the butterfly and the tree. Between the butterfly and the tree. Between the butterfly and the tree. Like it was some subliminal message or something.
Buried Treasure, the audio treasure map. They're not pirates, they're idiots. I'm Charlotte Reed. And if you do go digging and the treasure is missing, remember to leave the ground as it was found. Buried Treasure is a Joe Schmo production.